Radio Corporation of America presents The Magic Key. Magic Key turns, and the members of the family of RCA join in presenting over the nationwide NBC Blue Network an hour of distinguished entertainment featuring Marian Anderson, celebrated American contralto, in a transoceanic broadcast from Prague, Czechoslovakia. Paul Whiteman and his orchestra with Ramona, Bob Lawrence, and the King's Men. Colonel Stoop Nagel and Bud, the inventors and philosophers of Puckering Valley. John B. Kennedy, NBC commentator, in a broadcast from the Seeing Eye Training School for Dogs in Hanover, New Jersey. And Frank Black and the NBC Symphony Orchestra, who open this afternoon's program with a prelude in G minor by Rachmaninoff, transcribed for orchestra by Mr. Black. Thank you.
Oft disputed is the reward of greatness. Some say it is fame, riches, and others say it is happiness. Marian Anderson has sampled richly all these rewards. The applause of her audiences and the acclaim of critics must have been sweet music for this young Negro girl from Philadelphia. But greater than all this must be her happiness in knowing that she has repaid a thousandfold the nickels, dimes, and quarters which her friends donated in order that she might study music under a competent teacher. Their generosity gave to the world one of the greatest contraltos of our time. Today, she is in Prague, Czechoslovakia, one stopping point in a concert tour which is bringing her even greater recognition. To this far-off city in Central Europe, the magic key of RCA now turns to bring you Marian Anderson.
You will first hear Schubert's Ave Maria at the piano, Kosti Vehanen.
Thank you.
souls been anchored in the Lord by Florence Price.
For centuries, mankind bowed to one physical infirmity with despairing submission, blindness. As long as we have known of man, the permanent loss of sight has plunged him into a world of darkness from which there was no escape. It sentenced mankind to barren, cruel isolation. For with sightless eyes, he could neither read nor move about. In 1829, Louis Braille severed one of the chains that held men in darkness when he gave the world his system of raised letter printing, whereby the blind could read with the tips of their fingers. Although Braille brought light to the minds of the blind, darkness still handicapped their movement. And then from Europe a few years ago came news that this last great handicap of blindness had been conquered. After 10 years of experimenting, dogs had been trained to guide the blind safely and under all conditions. The task of educating dogs to guide the blind men and women of America was undertaken by a group in Hanover, New Jersey. Called the Seeing Eye, it has already brought the precious freedom of movement to several hundred blind people. Today, NBC's commentator John B. Kennedy is at the headquarters of the Seeing Eye to tell us of this amazing philanthropic experiment. The magic key turns to John B. Kennedy at Hanover, New Jersey.
Good afternoon, all. Through the streets of Hanover today, I saw a dog walking with two men. One was a blind man. The other man was the trainer of both man and dog. Here is the headquarters of a war waged against darkness, a war waged by dogs. This is the Seeing Eye, a rambling rural home near Morristown, New Jersey, where men and dogs meet together in a partnership that saves the blind from the crushing burden of pity and renders them independent of their handicap. First, we'll step into the kennels, the quarantine kennels where the new dogs are placed on probation when they arrive at this haven of the Seeing Eye. These are the freshman dogs, just arrived at school for their period of training. They're bright, eager dogs of various breeds, Labradors, Chesapeake Bays, but principally German Shepherd dogs, which are invariably the most responsive to the intense thought in guiding the blind that these dogs receive at the Seeing Eye.
In 1928, a young blind Southerner named Maurice Frank brought from Switzerland the first formally trained dog guide to come to this country. The German government had educated thousands of these shepherd dogs as guides for blind war veterans, and the Swiss used them as border patrols in their customs service. Young Frank tested his dog in the most congested and perilous American city traffic conditions and found the dog an absolutely reliable guide. So with the generous assistance of a Pennsylvania woman, Mrs. Harrison Eustace, the Seeing Eye was founded here in the rolling hills of Jersey. A quiet and competent staff of men and women receive, care for, and train both men and dogs for their intimate companionship. The dean of the trainers is Mr. Elliot S. Humphrey, a master of the psychology of both blind men and dogs. How many dogs have you graduated from the Seeing Eye, Mr. Humphrey?
There are now about 250 of our dogs in service.
And how many have you now in actual training here?
Some 40 dogs. Well, a fresh class arrived last week. Those are the dogs that barked at you when you entered the kennel.
Well, I hardly expected them to do anything else.
We do expect better of them. We teach our dogs to be silent so that they will not embarrass their masters whenever they go in private or public places.
How long does it take to train a dog, Mr. Humphrey?
About 3 months of intensive work at home and on the street.
And how long does it take your bright young men around here to learn to be efficient trainers?
About 4 years.
Then the dogs actually learn quicker than the men?
The dogs have much less to learn. They have only to be taught to serve one master, while the trainer must learn the peculiarities of the personalities of all kinds of blind men and dogs.
Could you explain, Miss Humphrey, to the Magic Key audience, as you were so kind to explain to me, the system you follow in training both men and dogs?
Gladly. Both the dogs and the men are kept under close observation for some days after they arrive here. We study their habits, their temperament. You know, most blind persons lose their sight in adult life. Less than 0.5% of all blind people are so handicapped from their birth. Loss of sight may develop certain phobias or fears, quite apart from deprivation of vision.
Yes, that is bad and sad enough.
We study these things in blind man and select for him a dog specifically qualified by nature and instruction to fit in with his needs.
Why, yes, I talked with one of your blind graduates, and he told me how he had a constant fear of injury, not from traffic, but from buildings. One day his dog abruptly halted a quiet stroll to pull its master sharply to one side. A beam abutted from a new building. He would have struck his head against it, but the dog was too alert. It saw the danger and acted. Now, he tells me, he walks about with the utmost freedom and confidence.
All the owners of all our dogs can tell similar stories.
Well, it's amazing to me that in so short a period, a dog can learn to be obedient to the call of one man.
But it is just as important for the dog to learn to be disobedient on occasion. Let me illustrate. You see that blind man walking through the foyer?
Yes.
Holding lightly the guiding harness in his left hand? He wants to go upstairs, but he's new to the house. Watch the dog.
Why, yes. The dog just came to a dead stop, while the man still urges him to go on.
Sure. The dog can see danger in unexpected stairs leading below. The dog disobeys its master to save him from possible harm.
Well, Mr. Humphrey, how do you decide that a dog is qualified to serve any particular blind man?
It depends quite as much on the man as on the dog. Some men and some dogs cannot get along well together.
Well, of course, that is not an unknown domestic situation anyway.
Some, very few, don't like dogs. But all dogs like some kind of man. We try to get man and dog to suit each other. You see, a dog's only reward for its work is affection, and a dog is very quick to detect whether or not it is being merely complimented for good service or actually loved for it. When we see a blind man likes and understands his dog, is safe, then off they go together.
Of course, as a rule, a dog's life is much shorter than a man's. How long is it?
Our dogs usually give 8 to 10 years of service.
Well, it must be a very great hardship when a blind man loses his dog.
Not as much of a hardship as it used to be, for all the blind man does now is to return to the Seeing Eye for a month's training with a new dog. Some blind men are now being guided by their third successive dog from here.
What is the shortest time in which dog and man, that is, after the man has been blinded, have been trained into perfect companionship?
That brings up one of many interesting cases. A college man from Idaho went hunting in October. A wild shot cost him his sight. He came here in January, finished his training with his dog in February, and was back at his college studies in March.
Why, Mr. Humphrey, look at that handsome gray shepherd dog. Oh, yes, and he's guiding a blind young woman.
She is Mrs. Callender. She's going to give her dog, Deetsy, its daily dozen. They need brief daily exercises to keep their familiarity with signals keen.
Please give Deetsy his daily dozen, Mrs. Callender.
Deetsy, come.
Responsive to every order. How long have you had Deetsy, Mrs. Callender?
For 20 months.
It's very evident that you are quite attached to each other.
Oh, yes. You see, they are the only eyes I have.
A pretty woman smilingly happy because she has alert and faithful eyes to guide her.
The blind, Mr. Kennedy, are invariably more cheerful than those of us with normal vision. That is, when they are independent of constant human help.
Well, it would be fine if all the blind could have that help.
That is the objective of the seeing eye. Even now, we're conducting a class for men and dogs in Denver, Colorado. We make the cost to them as reasonable as possible. Here at the school, $150 for the course includes keeping the home, which you will observe is run as a home and not as an institution.
I did.
That fee includes the purchase of the dog, its harness, training, and all equipment.
A happy combination of a philanthropy without a charity. It's dinner time at the seeing eye. Quietly, the dogs guide their blind masters to the table, where they sit and chat and smoke, with a radio and braille cards and checker games awaiting them afterwards. The dogs lie quietly, each by its master's side, eyes alert for every move, the seeing eyes. Anyone with a blessing of sight must rejoice in this blessed work that gives the blind the unfaltering loyalty and devotion of their dogs in their unremitting contest with darkness. The magic key of RCA returns you to New York City.
Frank Black, general musical director of the National Broadcasting Company, directs the NBC Symphony in his own arrangement of Perpetual Motion from the Third Violin Suite by Franz Reich.
You can't judge a radio by looking at it, and you can't tell how well a set is made by listening to it. You must rely upon the reputation of its maker. When you buy an RCA Victor set, you can rely upon the reputation of the company that makes not only the Magic Voice radios with Magic Brain, Magic Eye, and RCA metal tubes, but also manufactures NBC broadcasting apparatus and RCA Photophone motion picture equipment. The only manufacturer that builds everything in radio, from microphone to receiving set. Thus, you get the benefit of the skill of authorities on sound reproduction, combined with the knowledge of experts on sound transmission. So, when you buy your next radio, get reception that guarantees you RCA all the way. RCA from the microphone to your living room. Your RCA Victor dealer's demonstration of the magnificent RCA Victor Magic Voice radio will prove a revelation. You'll discover it brings you reception to match the fidelity with which RCA equipment and NBC engineering puts programs on the air. Prices begin as low as $20, and there are 28 attractive RCA Victor models selling for under $100. Your RCA Victor dealer will be glad to arrange convenient terms and a liberal trade-in allowance. Magic Key, unlocking a world of entertainment, presented for your interest and pleasure by the members of the family of RCA, who individually and collectively offer you every service in radio. Newspapers a few days ago carried a story that brought real pleasure to lovers of modern American music. Paul Whiteman and his orchestra were back in town, back after 6 months' absence in Fort Worth, Texas, and the King of Jazz had announced his plans for another ambitious season of fine music, plans that include a concert on December 1st in the New York Hippodrome, at which Mr. Whiteman will conduct the Philadelphia Orchestra together with his own organization in a program of modern American music. Whiteman, perhaps more than any other conductor, deserves credit for having interpreted to the people of the world the strange mood and tempo of Americans and American life. Through the concert stage, through radio, and by means of his Victor record, he has won universal recognition for modern American music. This afternoon, Mr. Whiteman and his boys and girls are here in person in the studio at Radio City. The Magic Key turns to Paul Whiteman.
We'll first play Penthouse Serenade, arranged by Adolf Deutsch, our chief arranger. This is an example of what we call Salon, a popular tune everybody knows, done in the modern manner. It's de Lovely, sung by Ramona. Suave, sophisticated chanteuse. To you, a grand girl at a grand concert piano, who has picked that grand hit tune, It's de Lovely, from the new success, Red Hot and Blue.
I feel a sudden urge to sing the kind of ditty that invokes the spring. So control your desire to curse while I crucify the verse. The verse I've started seems to me the tenth antithesis of melody. So to spare you all the pain, I'll skip the darn thing and sing the refrain. The night is long, the skies are clear, and if you want to go walking, dear, it's delightful, delicious, it's lovely. I understand the reason why you're sentimental, because so am I. It's delicious, delightful, lovely. You can tell at a glance what a swell night it is for romance. You can hear dear Mother Nature murmuring low. Let yourself go, so please be sweet, my chickadee. When I kiss you, you say to me, it's delightful, delicious, delectable, it's delirious, it's dilemma, it's delimit, it's delooked, it's delovely.
William Tell, a familiar passage from an old familiar overture which has been dressed up in new 1936 swing. It was written by Andy Rath and Leon Berry with profound and, I hope, sincere apologies to Rossini.
Thank you.
We have with us four boys from California who have been making great strides in radio for the past year or so. They're real fine. The King's Men, who are now joined by our popular baritone, Bob Lawrence, in George Gershwin's I've Got Plenty of Nothing from the opera Porgy and Bess. Favorite melody and arrangement of ours, Dardanella, which may have been the forerunner of swing music. Anyway, we recorded it 9 years ago. In those days, we called it jazz. I guess it's swing now.
Just as the rhythm of Paul Whiteman and his orchestra symbolize distinction in modern American music, so do RCA metal tubes represent distinction in modern radio reception. For both short and long wave reception, RCA metal tubes are better. Insist that your next radio be equipped with them. RCA metal tubes are the mark of a truly modern radio. When Beethoven's Sixth Symphony was first given
come
to
on, you're crazy.
Well, now
you're
I'm
why
anyway.
I don't want
Beethoven's
any trouble
Sixth
here.
What do you mean, Grower? We can't have a studio.
No, no.
We got as much right to be here as Paul Whiteman. I mean, who's Whiteman?
I don't know. Of course we have, Bud. Why, we've been on the air a long time, too.
Sure.
That seemed to me that the least they could do would be to give us a decent break.
That's what I say.
Goodness sakes, if NBC came to me and wanted a studio, I'd give it to them if I had a studio.
Yeah. Me, too, boy. I think it's high time.
High time what?
Well, it's just high time, that's all.
Well, listen, you'll pardon me, young men, but this happens to be the RCA Magic Key Show, and there's a sort of a program going on here. You can't come in and interrupt this way.
Well, we want to rehearse for our show later on this afternoon.
Yeah,
we got a broadcast of our own now, you know. That is, as far as I know.
Yeah.
It's a Minute Tapioca show.
Yeah.
So how's about letting us rehearse it right here on your show? You know, darn well we were going to bust in anyway. You were at rehearsal.
Sure. Hey, are we going to rehearse the very stuff we're going to do late this afternoon on our own program, Colonel?
No, but it's a good way of getting on the RCA show, isn't it?
Oh, I see. Well, look. Hey, Ben.
Yes?
Now that we're here and stuff, how's about that big build-up you were going to give us, remember?
Well, okay.
Yeah.
As you all know, ladies and gentlemen, these two guys, shall we say, are Colonel Lemuel Q. Stoopnagel and Bud, so take a bow, boys, take a bow.
Oh, that's fine. That's great. That's a nice build-up. Well,
yeah, it's a fine thing.
A great build-up.
Yeah, why don't you say something nice about it? You said a lot of stuff about Walter O'Keefe last week before you introduced
him. Yeah, we want an announcement like you gave Walter O'Keefe, gee whizzikers.
Oh, well, all right, there. You asked for it. The century was turning. Modes and moods were changing. Plush was being removed from sofas when Mrs. O'Keefe presented to Mr. O'Keefe a bawling bundle of pink. That was Colonel Stoopnagel and Bud.
Oh, fine.
That's better. That's better.
Yeah,
Ben.
That's right.
You know, Ben, there's something we've been wanting particularly to do for many years, which for some reason or other we hadn't done.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if RCA wouldn't let us do it.
Well, anything within reason, Colonel, you can be assured of that.
Well, I think it's about time someone paid some attention to the sound effectors, those valiant so-and-sos who've been making so many sounds for such a long time.
Well, I think that would be a very worthy thing, too, Colonel.
Now, I've written a little tribute to these intrepid lads who are always in the background themselves and who are only known by the sounds they make. Bud, you've never done any sound effects, have you?
No.
Well, here's your chance.
Oh, goody.
Yeah, it wouldn't be exactly fair to ask the regular sound effects man to do them while I'm speaking about him, would it?
No, it wouldn't.
No.
I think you'll let me handle the effects just this once.
Well, say, look, Bud, what's the name of your poetical tribute, or should I say Colonel?
You should say Colonel.
Well, I said Colonel. Go ahead.
All right.
Sound effects, I love you. It's peachy. We give away a sound effect with each line of the poem. You ready, Bud?
Well, I'm back here, Colonel. You can go. You know, I
don't any
know
good
one
back
sound
there?
Effect from another. Yeah, but I love to play.
All right. Are you ready?
Well, I guess so, yeah.
All right. Sound effects, I love you. Through the storm and strife of radio's most pioneering stuff, you have reigned supreme. No siren has lured you from your task. Nice work.
Yeah.
As the mother soothes the cry of a wailing babe, so have the winds of adversity been hushed by your genius. The shot and shell of controversy.
I can't stop the bird. All right, go ahead.
It isn't the first time you couldn't stop the bird. The shot and shell of controversy may whistle round you. I say the shot and shell of controversy may whistle round you. Still you stand practically nobly, using your skill. A little late there.
Yeah.
While the lilting songs of birds or the cataracts of Niagara. Whether the gentle opening and closing of a door... A door.
Oh, pardon me.
There's a telegraph instrument there, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Or the... I forgot. I haven't got to that yet.
That's what I thought.
Or the staccato call to all humanity from a ship at sea. Nice work. These things do you bring to us, each of its kind. The entire scale of sound, from the soft, the quiet, the light, to the heavy, the bombastic, the terrific. All are as violin strings. Are as violin strings. Violin strings.
Huh?
Violin strings.
Oh, pardon me.
Ah, thank you. All obey the ringing command of your voice.
Company, attention. Forward, march.
Sound effects, I love you.
Well, boys, those sound effects were fine fun.
Boy, it's fun. Can I come back?
You can. Sometimes we're not on the air. Say, boys, I've been listening rather regularly to your Sunday afternoon shows lately.
Oh,
you know?
So you're the one.
Yeah. Yes, sir. And I notice you frequently interview what you call the little-known men of industry.
Yeah, that's right, Ben. We do.
Well, the reason I mentioned it is that I have a personal friend here in the audience.
Oh, somebody you know, huh?
Yes, yeah. A personal friend who claims that he's qualified to be one of your men of industry.
Yeah.
Now, if I get him up here, I wonder if you'd interview him, Bud, would you?
Well, I think that'd be fine, Ben. Where is the guy?
Well, just a moment. He's right over there. Mr. Bowdlehunter.
Yeah, Ben, yeah. Well, Mr.
Come here, please, Mr. Bowdlehunter. This is Bud of Stoopnagel and Bud, Mr. Bowdlehunter.
Hiya, Bud. Where's the colonel?
Well, quiet. He just went down into the audience to come up on the stage as you.
Oh, I must be the colonel myself, then. Yeah. What won't we do next?
Yeah.
I could have sworn I was me all the time.
Say, look, we're all anxious. What was your name again?
Bowdlehunter. BOLHATR.
I see.
A good way of spelling.
Yes, I like that. Yes. Uh-huh. We're anxious, Mr. Bowdlehunter, to know something about your business, if you don't mind telling us.
Not at all. I am a listener to see if a soundproof room is.
You're a what? To see if a what? What?
I am a listener to see if a soundproof room is.
Well, look, elucidate.
Well, my job is when a soundproof room is finished being made soundproof, I make sounds to see if it is.
Oh. Now
I hear. You want to hear some of the sounds I make?
Yeah.
I want to hear some of the sounds
well,
I use.
Go ahead.
Oh, that's one of them. You want to hear another one?
Well, I really...
Woof,
just quiet. Just a minute now. Look, you can demonstrate your soundproof sounds later on in the interview. What I want to know is whether you see if soundproof rooms are soundproof alone or whether you have someone working with you.
I got someone working with me. Well, goodbye.
Well, wait a minute. Don't go yet. Who works with you?
Mr. Hontelbolzer.
Mr. Hontelbolzer and a Mr. Bowdlehunter.
Yeah, I had to fire him, though, and I had a very dickens of a time trying to go it alone.
Oh, you did, huh?
You see, I had to make the noise outside the room and then run into the room quick like a mouse to see if the sound was there. And on almost every occasion, I was too late.
Yeah, I can see that. Was there any occasion...
Every occasion,
quiet.
I was too late.
Why, you just read that.
I liked the line.
All right. Well, look... Was there an occasion where you ran into the room and actually heard the sound before you, or rather the sound you made before you went into the room?
Yeah, I went, you, outside, and then ran inside and went, whoo!
Yes.
Yeah. Nobody knew the difference.
Well, I can see.
Of course, I did. I didn't
care. Yeah, all right, I know all about that. You're indeed fortunate, Mr. Bowdlehunter, to have such a job as that. I'm wondering, though, if there's really any future in it.
You can just bet there is. Why, one of these days, someone is going to want a room where noise can get into it quick instead of a soundproof room where... No noise can get into it at all.
What's that?
You see, I really have a noise that'll go through any soundproof room. I hardly ever use it, though, because it's pretty raucous. You want to hear it?
Oh, good heavens, no. Wait a minute. My goodness. Listen, another yell like that, and you'll put Stoopnagel and Bud right off the air, Mr. Bowdlehunter.
Oh, put Stoopnagel and Bud off the air?
Well, yeah, certainly.
Goody. Yeah!
A retail sales investigator calling on a family in a suburban community near New York noticed a new 1937 RCA Victor radio in the living room. He asked the father of the family how he had happened to buy this particular make of set. This is what the man replied.
I'm a businessman here in town. I don't know anything about radios, but I do know about the Radio Corporation of America, the family of RCA as they call it on the radio. I know, for instance, that one member of this RCA family is the National Broadcasting Company. My family have listened to the programs of its two coast-to-coast networks for the past 10 years. Then, lately I have become acquainted with another branch of RCA. That's RCA Communications, which I use from time to time in ordering from firms in other cities in America, and also those in Europe and China. And just the other day I noticed a sign which said that RCA Photophone made the high-fidelity sound motion picture equipment used in our local movie house. In all these contacts with the Radio Corporation of America, one thing has impressed me. Their activities are concentrated on a single purpose, radio and sound reproduction. So when I wanted a new radio, it seemed logical to buy a set made by the one organization which had gained knowledge and skill from working in every field of radio. And that's why I bought a radio made by RCA Victor.
This man's reason for buying an RCA Victor radio again emphasizes our reason for saying, for every service in radio, use RCA. Next Sunday afternoon, the members of the family of RCA invite you to tune into the NBC Blue Network when the Magic Key will turn again to present another full hour of entertainment. An hour that will feature Morton Downey, popular singing star of radio, stage, and screen, the brilliant 15-year-old violinist Ruggiero Ricci, the two distinguished pianists Hannah Klein and Pauline Gilbert, an Argentinian dance orchestra conducted by Osvaldo Frizzedo and Frank Black and the NBC Symphony Orchestra.
Whiteman and his orchestra appeared through the courtesy of the John H. Woodbury Company. This is Ben Grauer
and Milton Cross speaking for one member of the family of RCA, the National Broadcasting Company.